Hey guys, it's Ethnically Ambiguous bonus episode. This is part of my Berlin Interesting People series. This is Anna. There'll be three episodes dropping. I hope you guys enjoy them. I'm interviewing a few friends. I'm starting this one by interviewing a very good friend of mine. Her name is Estrella Bonilla. She is an English teacher to kindergarten students in Berlin. She's also a yoga instructor for children, and she helps run Rabble Mag, which is a magazine for young teens to, or young women, to be creative and to maintain their creativity through their lives and not feel, you know, stunted by like life happening. Am I right, ladies? So yeah, stay tuned. It's a great episode.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hey, y'all. It's Anna. Hey, guys. So, looks like I am doing another bonus episode here in Berlin. So I'm doing a three series. I'm doing three different friends here in Berlin. They're all, in my opinion, interesting people with interesting stories. So this is the Interesting Berlin series. I don't know why I'm singing so much. I think I'm on crack. Berlin just brings out the psycho in me. I don't know if you noticed that. But yeah, so today I'm going to talk to a good friend of mine. Now, me and this person, we go way back. We went to college together at UC Davis. We are friends forever, unless she never speaks to me again after this podcast. So I'm so pumped to have her do this podcast because she's been an ethnically ambiguous friend of mine for a long time. We travel a lot together. This is our fourth time traveling in Europe together, and she lives in Berlin, so I always have to come find her. She's a tough cookie to find. So we've traveled to 9 different European countries together. How crazy is that? 9 countries we've been to. We don't even like each other. Just kidding. We're besties. So I'm so excited to have this person on my show. Her name is Estrella Bonilla. That's right. Her name stands for star. She's a star in my life. She's a star in a personality sense. She's a star in Berlin. So I'm so happy to have her. So, sorry, I'm literally laying down. I have to get up to interview her because I'm trash. So, my dear Estrella, welcome.
Thank you.
You're going to have to speak up or we're going to have a problem with you. You know what? See how Estrella is already acting up. That's what they say. Never interview your friends because they'll act up. So tell us what you do here in Berlin.
I work with children mostly. I work at a kindergarten as an English teacher in a bilingual private kindergarten. And not necessarily the teacher in the sense that you know of, like sit down in a classroom at a table and I tell them what to do. More of like integrative learning of languages and through play. So Berlin has a very cool like educational concept that is very unique to Berlin called the Berliner Bildungsprogramm. Anyway, it's very cool. And then I also teach kids yoga to 3 to 6 year olds and also to 7 to 9 year olds. And I'm also working on a creative magazine for preteen girls. So I kind of like work with a wide range of children.
So you really like, you're interested in the development of like children to young adults.
Yeah, which is kind of like, I mean, I didn't study this at all. I actually studied sociocultural anthropology at Davis, but it was funny how I then like ended up at this kindergarten in a sense, like observing human culture and behavior as an anthropologist would. And on the field of the kindergarten.
I feel like it's pretty like in the same lane of what you studied. You came and now you're observing a different culture. Thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's also a very international like range of cultures because it's kids from all over the world and there's a lot of expats in Berlin. Yeah, and then also in the sense of like, I was very, even though I studied sociocultural anthropology, I was also very interested in primatology. So it's also kind of like studying little primates and taking notes on the observations you make of their behavior.
They are little primates. You're teaching primates yoga.
Yeah, exactly. Just like reconnecting them to their monkey inside.
That's amazing. And a really great way to look at it. I guess I'm curious, like, what are the difficulties in teaching children yoga?
I think they're actually presenting themselves more so to me lately. When I first started teaching, I did it all voluntary based. So the kids kind of chose to come to yoga, which I find to be a very different experience for them, as opposed to now I'm teaching in a school where it's part of their curriculum, and that kind of presents itself in a very different way, because when it's part of their curriculum, it kind of feels like something that's forced on them, and it doesn't always like play out in the same way. They don't necessarily want to be there. They feel like it's something forced on them. At another kindergarten where I teach, where it's they choose to come, it's very different, and it's I find that they just like really want to be there, and they're very engaged. But the challenges, I mean, I'm teaching also, one of the classes I teach is 18 kids, so that's a big challenge, is meeting the like needs, the wide range of needs between 18 kids. Like, some of them really like the chill zen zone of like breathing and relaxing, and some of them really need active movement. So I try to like maintain a balance of both of those things throughout my classes.
That's really cool. Yeah. I would never even imagine teaching children yoga, but somehow you brought it to Berlin. Are you one of the only Berlin yoga teachers for children?
I'm part of a group called Turiya Yoga, and so we're a group of a few teachers that teach kids throughout Berlin. But there's only those few that I know of. I'm sure there are more, but I don't know of any like children's yoga studios in Berlin, but we're kind of like a mobile yoga studio because we go out to different schools and stuff. So
cool. So I kind of want to get into your background. So we met at UC Davis in college, but where are you from before you came to UC Davis? Tell us like where you grew up, and then also like your parents' background and where they're from.
Yeah, so I grew up in Sunland, California. It's I guess if you can say like a small town of LA, in the suburbs. Sunland, Tujunga, between kind of La Crescenta and Sun Valley. Yeah, in the valley. And my mom is from Ecuador, and my dad is from El Salvador, and they met in California, in LA. They were both working in the clothing industry. My father was he was working in the in a factory at the sewing machines, and my mom was a quality control inspector. And yeah, I guess they met there. And then I was actually born in Glendale and then moved to Sunland and grew up there my whole life. And yeah.
So did your parents live in Glendale, or what city did they meet in?
I don't know. In LA somewhere. I mean, yeah, they just met in one of like the clothing factories, I guess. So my sister and I, middle sister, both were born in Glendale, actually. And then my oldest sister was born in Ecuador. So she has a different dad that my mom was married to in Ecuador.
Yeah, I really want to get more into that. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, because this next chunk is going to be a real interesting one. It's going to be a story to hear. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back, and then we will hear more. All right, BRB. All right, we are back with my friend Estrella. So before we left, I said I wanted to get into kind of a story, and it's the story of how your mom came to America, and I wanted to kind of, I don't know, I thought in lieu of everything that's going on in America with borders and walls and separating children from their parents, just something you told me is like your mom, when she was seeing all this and you guys watched a documentary. What was that documentary called?
It was that Gael García Bernal film. It wasn't a documentary, but it was basically like portraying a few Mexicans that were crossing the border. And it was just like 2 hours of just, yeah, the gruesomeness of crossing the desert across the border.
Right. And you were saying your mom was like, this is not how I experienced it. So I want to hear the story of your mom, you know, leaving Ecuador and coming to America with your sister. I think it's very interesting. And I think it's, you know, it's more common than anyone thinks. Like people think like, oh, like illegal or something, immigrants. And I know it has this negative connotation and you're like, these are just people's lives. This is what they do to survive. This is how they leave their countries. How do they escape violence? How they escape shitty situations and try and create different worlds for themselves. And I think your mom is like a really good example of coming to America and like raising good people who aren't, you know, it's like that immigrant connotation currently is like, oh, immigrants, they come, they're, you know,
their resources and
yeah like they take our jobs and they're ruining this world. And it's like, actually, this entire city is built on the backbone of immigrants. So I want to hear more about your mom's story, if you could tell us how she came to America.
Yeah, so I've actually only recently learned this story a couple of years ago. I always knew that my mom had, you know, crossed the border, but I didn't know the details of it at all. And yeah, one day kind of just got her drinking some wine and had her tell me the story. But yeah, she, and I think also she probably was more open to telling the story because of what's been going on lately, and realizing that it's, you know, still, that it's an important story to tell and that it's still very much happening. And when we watched this film with Gael García Bernal, she was very like surprised of the journeys that people have to take now, because in her experience she doesn't feel like hers was as intense. But yeah, so she was married in Ecuador to my oldest sister's father in her early 20s. Like, yeah, she was very young. Had my sister, and then basically was like in an abusive relationship, and had the help of her employer at the time that helped her buy a flight to Mexico with my sister. So she kind of like escaped that. It was, somewhere she didn't want to be. And she already had, my aunt and my uncle were already living in the U.S. So she kind of had that destination to go to in L.A., so my sister was, I think, 4 or 5 years old at the time. And so they flew to Mexico and they were just given an address of somewhere that they had to go. And so my mom describes it as, yeah, they were just kind of walking around this town for a while, like trying to find this address of this woman that was meant to help them. And eventually they did. And she was actually, so she was with my sister and my cousin who were around the same age. And so they found this house, they found this woman that was going to help them, and then sent my cousin off with this random stranger woman that was going to get them across the border, then sent my sister with another, random strange woman that was like going to help her get across the border. And because they had passports of other children that were American citizens, so they drove across the border using those passports of other children, had the children sleeping, I think gave them like sleeping pills or something. And, my mom had to do the trek across the border, which is different, according to her, is different than the path that they take now. She didn't have to go across the desert as people have to now.
Is it 'cause it's just gotten a lot harder and tighter?
Yeah, exactly. So I think it was, the border was a lot more open at that time. So it would have been like the 80s. Like early 80s. And she used a coyote, which is a coyote is a person that helps you cross the border, like the person that guides you across. And so they had to, she has to pay this coyote to take her across. And so it was like a group of a ton of people. She said at one point she got robbed. And then there's like, she was in the trunk of a car at one point. She had to cross this like river. And the coyote like brought her on her back because like my mom was just like a tiny lady that probably like would have struggled, I guess. And then when she was in the trunk of the car, they took them to like this kind of safe house, basically with like just a shit ton of other immigrants that were crossing the border, just like sleeping on the floors and like just like rats everywhere and stuff. And then eventually they get across the border, and then she gets driven to like some cafe or something where then she gets picked up by my uncle. That was her journey basically. And then, and that was in her early 20s. Then she got to the US and then was reunited with my sister. Luckily, I guess.
How does
a lot of trust in that system.
How did she find them?
I guess they must have like given a contact, you know, like this is where you have to take my daughter once you cross the border, or maybe my uncle must or like picked her up once you cross the border or something. I mean, yeah, I guess there was a whole like system in place for this kind of thing. And then I guess just having a lot of trust in it, like that you're going to see your kid on the other side. Or
that is crazy. You really have to put your whole world in the lives of these people who are basically they have a train system to transfer people.
Yeah, it's like a trafficking of immigrants, like
for the better.
Better, yeah. Positive trafficking. Yeah,
that is right. Exactly. It's like positive trafficking. Like we're trying to go to a better, non-abusive, safe life, and everyone's like, "You're trafficking people." It's like, well, it's a different type of trafficking. Yeah. It's just it's like systematic in the way of like it's saving everyone. That's wild. Okay, yeah. So she gets to the U.S. and how does she go about like basically like setting up a life?
Yeah, so luckily, I mean, she had her brother and sister who were already there, and they were already working in the like clothing factories, and that was how they all were making a living. And so they helped her get a job doing that. And it's also like in the clothing industry, it's just all immigrants, basically. Like, I mean, it's like a lot of Latinos and Asians in the factories and like doing that sort of work. So my mom obviously didn't have like identification there or anything, or like a social security number, but she, I don't really know how this works, but she explained it that like my aunt who had traveled to the US years before had been given a social security number, and her name is different than my mom's name. So she used her social security and basically adopted her identity. So she was known with a different name, like as a different name for the first like 5 years of her life in the US. So it's strange now, like she still has friends that call her name's Mercedes, but she still has like a lot of friends from her earlier life in the US that know her as Ana, because that was her alias basically. And then at some point that like Reagan amnesty thing happened, and then she was able to like be legalized because it was just you had to like prove that you had gone into the U.S. before 80 something, like 82 or something, and then you were given the right to like you had to back pay all your taxes and like prove that you had no criminal record and stuff. And then she was able to become legal, I guess, and then years
become a citizen.
I think at that point, yeah, she was able to become like legal and be given a green card. And then later on, she was able to apply for citizenship, but not necessarily yet at that point. I don't think she was.
Got it. Okay. So I didn't even know about any of this.
Yeah, I didn't know about it either until she, she told me this story, and it's crazy.
And it's like no questions asked. You just do your business, get your shit done, and then you can slowly become a citizen.
Yeah, but I mean, she didn't know that, like, and probably a lot of immigrants didn't know that that was going to be a reform in immigration law. You know, it was just like people were just living there illegally like she was. And then all of a sudden this happens and she's able to, like, legalize herself because she had been working a job. And like, but yeah, it's crazy because you have to say, like, I'm guilty of committing fraud, like identity fraud. But I've been contributing to, like, the economy here and, like, being a, in every other way, like, you know, a rightful citizen.
Right. She did what she had to do to survive, which it's crazy that that's, like, frowned upon. But it's like she didn't do, the only thing she did that was illegal was to use a fake identity only to survive in a country to be safe, which is wild. Which is also interesting that she would, to like, her plan was potentially just use a fake identity for the rest of her life.
Yeah. And like many, I guess, immigrants were doing. And then, yeah. And then that just happened.
And was this before or after you were born that she was able to do this?
This was before. So that happened in the 80s and I was born in 90. So, yeah, that was, I guess, before. But I mean, at that point, she'd already been living there for a few years. And then at some point, she met my father and had my other sister and I.
Do you think she would have had you guys had she not been able to get a green card?
I have no idea.
I know, it's kind of a question for her. If you could get her on the line. I'm just curious, like, how... Because, you know, I've had friends, I've known people in the past who couldn't go to college because they just didn't, they like were illegal. Like their parents brought them over at a young age and they just, they're just like, they had no way of proving that they were a citizen other than the fact that they had, like, you know, a fake identity. So I'm always curious, like, how you would go about that. Like, it's like the Dreamers Act, like that finally came along and he, my friend that I'm talking about, could go to college.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because, I mean, technically also my sister, you know, was born in Ecuador and she ended up going to university later in life also. So I guess so then in the 90s, there was also this thing with like family visas or something. And maybe at that point she was able to get, I don't really know how it worked for her, but yeah, she went to college and she kind of like set that path up for the rest of us, because I'm not sure if that would have been, I don't know, you know, because there was nobody before her mm-hmm. in our family that had gone to an American university and like pursued that path, because everybody else had, like, the previous generation had just done what they could to survive.
Right, which, you know, as an immigrant, that's kind of what you do. You know, a lot of immigrants get lucky. Like, my parents got lucky in the sense that they came from a privileged world, like in the sense that they had families and that they were able to apply to college and come to America and go to college here and get like visas to study. I guess they eventually decided not to go back to Iran because they're still there. But it's an interesting thing where they were able, by having that visa to study, able to basically turn that into a work visa and then turn that into a green card and then turn that into citizenship.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't. It's not that easy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also generally in Latin America, I don't think that like the academic mm-hmm. path to America is a very common one. No. Yeah.
No, because I think it's more about making money to feed your family. It's not like, well, you know, it's not like, well, I should get that degree first. It's like, well, that degree costs fucking money and that money would be better served feeding your family.
Yeah. And then it's crazy because it also really limits the whole like assimilation factor into the U.S. I mean, my mom, she can speak English, but she has a very thick accent and it's quite limited. Like, not until very recently was she able to like take community college classes to properly learn English. in her 60s, you know.
Did she? She took started taking classes to learn English?
Yeah, because she was recently, well, a couple of years ago, like, laid off from her job. So then she took the opportunity to go to college, which is cool. She was, you know, taking community college classes to like practice and learn English properly. And also the funny thing is, in her work field, in the factories and everything, like, because there's a lot of immigrants, like, she was able to always pretty much get by speaking Spanish or speaking English in, you know, with a very thick accent and not necessarily correctly.
Right. Yeah. Is that what she stayed working in, factories, or did she slowly move up? Because I remember you saying she moved up to, like, head of the factory, and that's how she met your dad.
Yeah, so she, when we were younger, she was working, like, three jobs. She was doing that, and she was also working at, like, a convalescent home and something else I can't remember. But, yeah, then she built herself up and became, like, a quality control, and then she was, like, a quality control supervisor, and then, like, she was a production something, I don't know. And it's, like, very ironic too, because that job then required her to go out to places like El Salvador and Guatemala and Mexico and supervise the production of clothing of, like, cheaper labor that's happening in these countries, and, like, you know, basically where she could have been had she stayed in her country, or, you know.
Wow, so she was literally, like, seeing, like, a parallel universe version of herself where that could have been her had she not escaped.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's a wild life. I can't even, obviously I can't imagine. I've never struggled ever.
I mean, and then in the shitty sense, though, then, like, kind of exploiting that, that what she could have been, you know, because she has to go. I mean, her job was to go to, for example, companies in Mexico and be like, can you do this for a cheaper price than they'll do it in the U.S.? And then kind of exploit that labor, basically, which is fucked up.
Yeah, but what can she do, you know? She's just a cog in the system. Like, she has to do the work to be paid to feed her family. Like, she can't be the one like, is anyone noticing how fucked up this is? They'd be like, bitch, you just need to be happy you are here.
I know, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Wow, well, shout out to Mercedes. Really doing the Lord's work. That's, you know, and it's interesting because she has three kids and you guys are all three college educated. So she really did come out here and, for the most part, get that American dream popping. Like, she bought her own home in LA and raised you guys there.
Yeah. Yeah, she definitely, like, she definitely always brags about that. Yeah. Like, yeah, but, like, I raised three very intelligent women and they go to college and, you know.
It's true, though.
Yeah, I know. It is very cool. Like, yeah, she did it.
And so you guys are, like, the perfect example of why we shouldn't be so goddamn hard on immigrants trying to come and find and make new lives for themselves. It's like, you don't know what the fuck you don't know what their situation is. You don't know anything about them. Don't just assume. That's what, like, the hardest thing is, people make these assumptions. And especially now with Trump, like, putting all this shit in people's fucking minds, just, like, free jazz soloing about random shit that you're like, what are you even talking about? You're just talking. Nothing makes sense. And then everyone's like, yeah, I agree. We can't trust these people. And it's like, dude, these people are, like, doing everything for you.
Yeah. And even, I mean, even as a kid myself, like, growing up in the U.S. and, I mean, also being born in the U.S., but being born into, like, a clearly different family than everybody else, like, where we spoke Spanish at home and, like, ate different food and had a very different culture than what it was like to go to, you know, a white friend's family and see something totally different. And me not understanding that, like, me not understanding at all my mother's everyday struggle of, like, even the struggle that was before I existed, you know, like just taking that for granted and not really ever trying to get it, just living my own experience of like, ugh, like, why can't I sleep over at my friend's mm-hmm. house? I just don't get it, mom, you know?
Yeah, I feel like we as children, Americanized children, we take everything for granted. It's kind of like our hobbies. We're just like, until we're older, then we're like, oh my God, they did so much for us.
Yeah, and then I'm like, okay, mom, tell me your story. Like, you fucking crossed the border. Crazy. I was just complaining about bullshit like the whole time. Like, yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah, she's like, I pay the coyote to bring me across the border, you ungrateful piece of shit.
So no, you can't fucking spend the night at your friend's house tonight. I'm going to keep you safe here. Yeah,
that's great. On that note, on the keeping you safe note, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And we'll be right back. And we are back. Wow. Estrella's mom is a true American dream survivor, something like that. I don't know what I'm saying. She's an example of a true immigrant American dream. She made a baby. She raised three beautiful women, educated, went to college. She bought her own home in beautiful, sunny Los Angeles, California. Yeah, and she never lets you sleep over anywhere. Like, my mom and dad never did as well, because that is the immigrant rule.
Now we take advantage of all the sleepovers we can get. Like, hey, can I crash?
You know what's actually really funny is I don't really like sleeping over at people's houses, and I think my parents have, like, ruined it.
It's like, oh, this is not my bed or my pillow. This is very uncomfortable.
Yeah, I've been, like, staying with you, and I miss my bed.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah.
So I want to get into a little about why and how you came to Berlin and talk a little bit about the magazine you work on. So tell us, like, what brought you to Berlin? Like, what were you looking for? Like, after you graduated, you traveled the world a lot. That's what I always remember about you. I was like, what is Estrella doing? And you'd be like in Argentina or somewhere. Like, you were just always everywhere. So, like, what did you see yourself doing after you graduated? And, like, what eventually led you to Berlin?
I had no previous intention of studying anthropology until I was at Davis, and then my third year got very into studying Latin America and indigenous cultures and feeling very drawn to that. And right when I finished Davis, I went straight to South America, just bought a one way. And I finished my studies there and spent a month in Ecuador and just got like very connected to my roots. And I just really enjoyed meeting people and having, just varied experiences. And like, also, I remember one of the big things, like, my mom was always so worried about me because I was traveling alone for a bit, and recognizing that there was so much more good in the world than there was bad, like in an everyday experience. I really like felt that very powerfully. And so I spent some time in South America, and that was kind of like where I thought I would end up going back to move to. But then I came to Europe and I spent like 3 months in Spain. And then I went back to California, and Berlin was like never on my radar at all. But at the time I was in a relationship and he was moving here, and I thought like, well, I know the next time I go somewhere, like I want to actually try living there. And I was kind of like, I was not that I was over the backpacking thing, but I just like wanted to just settle somewhere. So I just decided to give it a try. I mean, I kind of really wanted to be near a body of water, and that's very much not Berlin. But I came out here, and Berlin makes it quite easy, actually, as an expat, to apply for a visa and everything. And things just really worked out for me. Like, in a matter of like a couple of months, basically, I got a visa, a job, a flat, and everything just kind of came together. And I thought, all right, I'll just give it a try. I mean, yeah. So like the relationship was kind of like an impetus to go to a new place and try to settle there. So then, yeah, I thought I'd give it a try, and it's just like worked out. And I also felt like the reason I stayed here, even though it was really hard the first year or two, really like settling somewhere that's so far from home, so far from my family and my friends and my comfort zone. Yeah, it was really difficult at first. And then, yeah, but Berlin, I felt like, because just before living in Berlin, I was living in San Francisco, and it was just so fucking expensive. And I was like, I don't really want to like just go into the tech industry for the sake of like having money to afford living here. And Berlin really proved to be a place where I like could like comfortably live while exploring what was interesting to me. And I knew I wanted to work with kids at that time. Like I had just done like a TEFL thing and didn't want to teach English to adults, so I went into working with kids, and I really liked it. And yeah, so I kind of just like stayed here because I felt like it was really, I was given a lot of freedom and room to explore myself and like what I wanted to do. And that's really like come together for me. I mean, I've practiced yoga for a long time, and I just randomly one day was like, hey, well, why don't I try this with the kids? And so I did, and then that really grew from there. And I'd like to actually now just focus more on that, rather than being an English teacher at the kindergarten. But yeah, so that kind of just like fell into place for me, and like connecting my interests. And this magazine that I've been working on now, it's called Rabble Magazine. I've been working on that for about a year now, or a little bit more. I started working with the founder, who also only started the magazine a couple of years ago, but it's for young, like preteen girls. And it focuses on kind of like holding on to that like desire and like element of creativity that we have as kids that we like lose at some point. I mean, and not everybody does, like not everybody loses that sense of creativity or that like need to hold on to it, but I feel like I have. And so I really like vibed with this, the idea of this magazine, because yeah, it's about like, you know, honing in on that sense of like that natural sense of creativity that we have as kids, and like holding on to it and not letting anything else tell you that like it's not good enough, or you're not going to be the best at it, so don't do it. Or, you know, like shit like that gets into our heads and keeps us from doing the things that we want to do. So yeah, the magazine is really to empower young girls to just hold on to that and like fuck the rest of, you know, the shit that tells you that it's not good enough. Like, just do it. And yeah, we want to share stories about other women and young girls that are just doing it.
Yeah, I think that's important also to like see. I mean, it's hard when you're like a child of color and you're being raised by like immigrants. There's nothing made for you. And I'm not just saying like, you know, obviously this magazine's not just for like kids of color, but like it's just like girls all over the world. Like, you don't see things made for you, you know? Like, everything's kind of, like, there's, like, a certain aesthetic where everything is, like, marketed towards, like, you know, like, well, mostly white people. Everything's more marketed towards white people, like, for the most part, unless you're, like, in a certain country. And even then, like, a lot of stuff doesn't get to you because you're in, like, a remote location. So I do think it's kind of important to see yourself represented as a child. And to be like, oh, well, look, this kid's doing this sort of art. I can do that. Like, it doesn't have to be on that scale, but at least I know it's possible. Like, yeah. It doesn't need to be in a magazine. I can just do it for myself. And
Yeah, exactly. That you can do things and it doesn't have to be the best. You don't have to be the first. You don't have to be, you know, something extraordinary. That, like, whatever you do matters. And also, I think as, like, a kid of an immigrant, of immigrants, like, creativity is hardly valued, you know, like, it's about being a doctor. It's about, you know, studying to become a lawyer or something that's going to make you money. And creativity isn't something that, like, I don't remember as a kid. I don't remember that being something that was, like treasured as an important part of my childhood. And I think, yeah, it needs to be given attention, like, not, you know, for all kids. There's nobody in my family previous to my generation that was, like, exploring a creative field, you know? So, yeah, exactly, to, like, represent people of color that are doing those things despite the cultural limitations of, like, it not being something you should pursue because it's not worth it.
Yeah, that's very real. I mean, even today, like, I try and find things to, like, you know, like, we were talking, like, I try and do, like, the macrame. I'm not great at it. Estrella is really good at macrame. She can make us a macrame plant holder for the office. And, like, I do, like, cross-stitching. I personally am drawn more towards, like, the crafty things to just keep myself staying creative in weird ways. I mean, I also am, like, a podcaster. But, like, after a while, you're like, how many more dumb jokes can I make about the Middle East or being a person of color where you're like, I get it. But I like the physicality of it, being like, I'm working with my hands, but it's something that brings me joy, like cross-stitching butts, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think also, I mean, with this magazine project, like, it's been, I really like to see, like, a tangible thing that I've created. And, yeah, I don't know if I would be pursuing something like this if I weren't in Berlin, like, because I have the freedom to, I have the time, I have the, like, the comfort of, like, being financially okay to be able to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. Berlin's an interesting place because, you know, I talk about this in my interview with our friend Patty, where there's the cost of living is cheaper, but they also kind of, like, use that as a reason to pay you less. But it is kind of it's a nice city to explore yourself and your interests and any sort of creativity because the city is just full of art.
Yeah, definitely. And it feels okay to do that. You know, like, all art is equal almost in a way here.
That is true. I always like to say it's all street art. It's history, but they make it street art.
Right.
That was my bit this whole time when I've been on this trip. So where can people, like, look up Rabble magazine and check it out and stuff?
Yeah, we're on Instagram as Rabble Mag. That's RABBELMAG. Yeah, so we've got a lot of inspiring content on there. And we've actually just launched a Kickstarter a few weeks ago. So if you want to support us there, we're on Kickstarter. I guess you can just search Rabble Magazine.
Or is it on the website?
It's also on the website, yes. Thank you. Which is rabblemag.com, RABBELMAG.com.
Yeah, so if you're into supporting women making content for young women, or making an outlet for content for young women, go check them out. And I don't know if you're an artist. I don't know. Maybe you submit something. Who knows? Maybe something, you're doing something cool for kids. Or
yeah, write to us. Yeah, write to us.
Yeah, write to them. Yeah, write to them. Is there anything else you would like to promote?
Yeah, if you have kids, like, get them into mindfulness and yoga. It's important. I think it's something that, like, we as adults strive to achieve now. So I think it's so important to instill it in children. They're, like, very natural at it. So,
wow, I never even thought of it that way. I'm going to get my cats and my dog into it.
Yeah, could you imagine? It's very instinctual, you know? To them, it's like, What do you mean meditate? Like, I do that all the time. What do you mean, like, sit here and not do anything?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
I had to force her to do it. You guys, she's like, how can I talk for 45 minutes? I was like, I'll get it out of you. Yeah, so guys, thank you so much for listening. Check out Rappel Mag. Get your kids into yoga. Get yourself into yoga and mindfulness, you know? Get them kids chilling. Downward Dog. That's the only one I can think of by name. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to this bonus episode. You can follow me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, AnnaHosnieh. You can follow the Instagram of the podcast at ethnicallyambig, AMBIG. You can follow us on Twitter at ethnicallyamb, AMB. You can go to our website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com. I will also link all of Estrella's stuff in our footnotes, so just like look for that. It's like right in the description. And yeah, you guys, you know, stay mindfulness, stay children's yoga, stay Rappel Mag. All right.